Welcome back to the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Now, back to Tim, Jim, and Doug, live from the Gateway Buick GMC Studios on the all-new 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
But I'm coming back. Don't give me no flack. Yeah.
Flapjack. It's Ryan Kelly Morning After. This is the all-new 590 The Fan. KFNS, 105.7 HD2 FM. And InsideSTL.com. Timothy Michael McKernan, Jimmy the Cat Hayes, Douglas Alvin Vaughn with you here in the second hour of this award-winning presentation. Doug, a friendly reminder that Tullamore Dew is the official Irish whiskey of the Ryan Kelly Morning After. For those who make their corner of the world a little more interesting for us all, there is only one drink that will do. Tullamore Dew, the official Irish whiskey of the Morning After, a whiskey of true character. Glasses up to responsible drinking. Blues opening the season tonight, and Kelly Chase will be with us every single week of the season, brought to you by Petro Martin. He's going to join us coming up at 9 o'clock here on the radio program. But right now, it is our pleasure to welcome to the show from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, and you can also hear him on the Big 550 KTRS, ladies and gentlemen, Tony Messenger. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Tim, Jim, and Doug. How are you fellas doing?
It's great, to hear your voice, sir.
Always good to be back on your show.
Well, you have written a number of columns, of course, with the election season now 27 days away from November 8th. So many different things to discuss, and I certainly want to go more local over the course of the interview, but let's start with what we saw at Washington University on Sunday evening. I was watching CNN's morning show this morning, and I believe was Anthony Cuomo who said that that may have been one of the lowest points in presidential debate history with what went back and forth on Sunday evening. A, were you surprised to see it go down that path? And B, historically speaking, do you view it in the same context as was compared this morning on CNN?
I don't know anybody that doesn't view the general context of this election as one of the lowest points of our presidential election cycles in American history. And I think the debate Sunday night was definitely contributed to that, and sort of the pure symptom of what has gone wrong with our system. When one of the major candidates for president decides to just basically act like a child on a national stage and just have such disrespect for any level of intellectual honesty, it's just amazing. I wasn't particularly surprised by it. I was pleased that Hillary Clinton used the line that she attributes to First Lady Michelle Obama: "When they go low, stay high." And I think for the most part she did that. She, as I wrote Monday, Sunday night, but for my Monday column, she tried to use some unifying language. Now, people in the electorate who just have demonized Hillary want to gloss over that. But the fact is, she tried to use some unifying language. She, as an adult, once again repeated her apology for the way she expressed dismay with many of Donald Trump supporters, and said, "I apologize for the deplorable comment. My fight is with him, not with you. I want to be a president for all Americans." And so that was hopeful. That was the traditional thing you like to see in a presidential campaign, because in all presidential campaigns, about half the nation is going to vote for the person who loses. And yet that person who wins is going to be your president, the president of all of us. And this is a country that traditionally has accepted and embraced that ethic. And frankly, that's the biggest thing that scares me about this election cycle, is that Donald Trump is actually encouraging his most fervent followers to not accept that ethic, to not accept the results of American democracy, no matter what the result, because they're going to say that it was rigged. They're going to assume that somehow Hillary still needs to go to jail, and we're going to be into, you know, another election cycle with more angst and more anger and less unity. So it's disappointing to me, but, you know, being there at the debate, well, at least being in a room next to the debate with 2,000 of my closest media friends, I wasn't particularly surprised by what I saw. Disappointed, but not surprised.
Do you think, you know, based on the two candidates, who I think both are fair game in terms of accusations of being dishonest, do you think Hillary gets a pass? I mean, you know, people accusing her in the primary of rigging it. You know, we see some stuff from WikiLeaks that indicates that, yes, the Democratic Party was, you know, trying to help her as best they could against Bernie. And based on her past, you don't think that's fair game to attack her on whether or not she's an honest person and has been acting in an honest fashion as she tries to serve the nation?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's a matter of context. And if you look at any of the fact check comparisons from the debates, purely from the debates, but then if you can go through the campaigns, you're talking literally about I'm going to throw some numbers out, and they're not going to be the accurate numbers, but they'll be close in terms of the point I'm trying to make about context. You're talking about 500 Donald Trump lies compared to 10 for Hillary Clinton. Yes, Hillary Clinton is sometimes dishonest. Yes, Hillary Clinton does. Like most traditional politicians, parse and spin her words in ways so that sometimes she's in favor of free trade, sometimes she's against the TPP. You know, her positions are malleable as it relates to that, depending on the audience. No doubt about that. But the context, and in terms of comparing to Donald Trump, literally just either A, doesn't know anything about American foreign policy, or B, just throws out whatever comes to mind and then changes his mind later, and then literally sometimes in the same discussion denies what he just said, what we all just saw him say. I mean, there is simply no comparison there. And as it relates to the WikiLeaks things, two things. One, you have to understand the context. This is, according to American intelligence, this is the Russians trying to intercede in our election. That's unprecedented, and they're doing so with the help and for the purpose of electing Donald Trump. That's disgusting.
Yeah, I think Donald Trump is reprehensible. I think Hillary Clinton is reprehensible, and the stuff with the tape, indefensible. And to me, I've said this. Donald Trump is who you guys on the left have been saying who he is all along. There's no getting around that. You know, like, this guy is vile. You can't defend him. But at the same token, because I do consider myself to be more in the middle, it's almost like Hillary gets a yes, just because he's vile doesn't mean that what Hillary's done isn't vile. And I think if you compare the two, there's a lot of similarities.
Two things. One, you labeled me on the left. In fact, I'm very much in the middle, as you describe yourself. So let's be careful there. Looking at this election, look at the number of major big-name Republicans who have jumped off the Trump bandwagon or early, never got on it, and are voting for Hillary Clinton because she's clearly the most qualified candidate. So just because somebody's backing Hillary Clinton doesn't mean they're on the left. I've been an independent voter my entire life. I voted for George W. Bush twice. He was a Republican back when Republicans were still Republicans. I voted for Barack Obama twice. I tend to split my ticket. So that's part of the problem with the nature of our discussion today. If you happen to be opposed to Donald Trump, who frankly isn't even a Republican and definitely isn't a conservative, then all of a sudden you're a lefty.
No, I'm just saying because I agree with everything you're saying, and I've said that on this show. He said pretty recently, before he became a Republican nominee, that he self-identified as a Democrat. My point is that just because this guy is awful doesn't make Hillary less awful. And if I mischaracterize you as someone on the left, then I apologize. But we got To me, it's pretty clear. We have two candidates that are as flawed as any candidates I can remember.
See, I don't accept that. I think we have. I think Hillary Clinton is flawed, and I think she's a poor campaigner, and she's not very well liked. And some on the right have spent a tremendous amount of time demonizing her rather than actually discussing about policy. I believe that what the president said when he introduced her at the Democratic National Convention is true. She is probably the most qualified presidential candidate in history. She's not the most liked, and she clearly has flaws because she's been in public office for or in the public eye for 30 years. But look at the biggest things that she's getting beat up on. Trump's beating her up on her husband, which is just sexist in and of itself, and he can't, and many of his supporters can't even see that, that it sort of doubles down on stupidity as it relates to misogyny. She's getting beat up on Benghazi. There have been at least four congressional hearings that completely cleared her of wrongdoing in Benghazi. She's being beat up for destroying emails, which a lot of people, including me, have criticized her for, but have also pointed out within the context that that is a problem throughout our government. She got investigated by the FBI, and while the FBI said that what she did was careless and they criticized it, her over it, and her handling of it in terms of taking forever to apologize for it was ridiculous, she was cleared and not charged. So all of these things have been vetted. All of these things have been investigated. In a normal presidential year, they would be serious criticisms, and they might, in fact, cause her to lose an election against a better candidate, say if the Republicans had elected a grown-up in John Kasich, for instance.
I agree with that.
So absolutely, in a normal year, she might lose. But to say that he's reprehensible and so is she is completely false equivalence and doesn't represent the facts that are available. To say he is vile and so is she is completely unfair. To say he's vile and reprehensible and she's a flawed candidate, that's fair. That's within the context.
Well, we see a difference. We see it. I take anyone who seems to have a disdain for transparency in telling the truth that is supposed to be serving the country, and I don't care what party you're in, I find that vile and reprehensible.
Well, but that's the nature of our government. I believe historians, for instance, 20, 30, 40, 60 years from now, will end up ranking Barack Obama's presidency as one of the great presidencies in America. And yet, people like me will tell you, even though I think he's been actually, when you look at the historical record, a very good president, he's been the least transparent president of all time. Our current governor, Jay Nixon, is the least transparent governor of all time. And that includes his predecessor. And I spent a hell of a lot of time and effort trying to get 60,000 emails out of his predecessor. So that's the nature of our politics today, and it's bipartisan. It's Republican and Democrat, and as a member of the media, I absolutely hate that. We need to find a way to reverse that. So Hillary Clinton is not unique there, so that context has to be considered when making that criticism.
Based on what do you say Obama's presidency will be one of the best? It seems like the foreign policy has failed miserably. Race relations are as bad as they've been in half a century. What are you saying he's done that has been so great?
I believe the move to the Affordable Care Act will ultimately be historic when you look at the number of people who are insured now and who are not. And that health debate is going to continue, but we're not going to go backwards in terms of the number of Americans that have access to health care. We have finally turned the access to health care into a right and not a privilege, and I think that's huge. I think you look at the transition, and this isn't all due to the president, but he's been in charge during this time, and while slow to it, ended up leading. You look at marriage rights and the change in both federal rule and then federal law under the Supreme Court in terms of recognizing that love is love. That's historic, and that's going to go down in the rest of the nation. The way he has led on this transgender issue is going to be huge. When you look at the economic record, no other president in history has had the number of consistent months. I don't want to say the months because I'll get it wrong, but he's had more months in a row of private sector job gains than any president in history. He helped us recover from the worst recession since the Great Depression. There are numerous examples. And the race relations thing, that to me is just offensive. He gets blamed for being a black president and talking about race.
No, that wasn't
president
the reason.
Barack
the reason
Obama
is that when there was a police shooting,
race relations down, the racists who said that the president wasn't born in this country and then decided to punish him for 8 years because of the color of his skin, that's why race relations are bad.
I don't think that's right at all.
A presidential candidate who's decided that it's okay to encourage blatant racism, that's why race relations are bad. That has nothing to do with the president other than the fact that he dared to be the nation's first black president.
No, I would disagree completely. First of all, if somebody has a father who was born in another country, I think asking to see the birth certificate isn't a racial thing. It's just it's a legal thing. You want to make sure that he's...
Yeah, you ask, you see it, and then it's over. You don't carry on an 8-year campaign to try to say that the president is a Muslim from Kenya. That was pure racism.
Well,
Donald Trump was behind much of it.
I don't know about that. Sidney Blumenthal brought that up when Hillary was running against Barack Obama. That's how that all started, from Hillary's campaign,
Hillary
not Donald
Clinton's
Trump's
campaign. He never brought it up. Hillary Clinton's campaign and Hillary Clinton herself never brought it up. Donald Trump, Joe Arpaio, the Republican Party. Roy Blunt, our senator from Missouri, is on tape a few years into the president's term not denying the issue because he didn't want to anger the racists that are in his party.
Well,
I think race relations went sour when
Obama rushed
for 8 years is an indication of why the president had such a hard time dealing with racial issues, because he was punished for 8 years for daring to be the nation's first black president.
I just don't think that's true. I think every time someone criticizes a policy, it's not racist. Well, you can't criticize anything he does without being called a racist. That in itself is racist.
I just criticized his transparency. I just said he's the least transparent president in the history of the country. You can criticize without being racist, but
how? It doesn't seem like that's possible.
You just do it. But to say that the president is to be blamed for race relations because he dares to be black.
No, that's not it at all. That's not it at all. That's not it at all. I believe the problem came.
Point to one thing the president did to hurt race relations.
When there was police shootings of black people before the facts were in, he came out and was blaming the police. Just like in Ferguson. Yes, he was. Just like in Ferguson, and it turned out that it was a justifiable shooting.
He was coming up for the lived experience of black people in this country, and he was doing so in a meaningful way, and he was also saying, we have to examine, and we have as a nation, we have to examine our police practices. And the president's leadership has led to a national examination of police practices, and we continue to be in the process of examining and changing those things because we have recognized as a nation that we have a problem. And the way we're going to keep police more safe in our country is by continuing to improve relations between the police and the community. And the president recognizes that and led on that issue.
Well, if you're Darren Wilson in Ferguson and you're attacked by somebody who's trying to get your gun and you shoot him, maybe that's not the time to make that stand. If you're Darren Wilson, I suspect you shoot also to save your own life and to come out before the facts are in and to have a black-run Department of Justice and an FBI investigation come out and say it's a justifiable shooting and then make that your stand as a time to come out against the police. I think that did a major harm to race relations in this country.
Doug, your argument there is much like the NRA argument every time there is a mass shooting in this country. Now's not the time. Now's not the time to talk about gun violence. Now's not the time to talk about racial profiling in blacks. Now's not the time.
Well, yeah, when someone attacks a policeman, now's not
the
time to talk about poor police behavior.
Every time we have one of these shootings, every time there is a clear video in which the police have made a mistake, every time there is another shooting in which there isn't a body camera, every single time we have one of these is the time to talk about it.
Well, talk about it, absolutely. And in the case of wrongful shootings, yes, the police need to go to jail. But before all the facts are in, he shouldn't come out against the police just to say, well, a black guy got shot. It had to be racist motivated. That's just not right.
I don't think the president ever said that. I think you're conflating what the actual facts are.
Well, okay, we'll agree to disagree. But I think that's where race relations began to take a big hit in this country, with the police shootings and how they were handled, especially the ones that were justified.
I think race relations began to take a hit in this country the day after the president was elected, and Mitch McConnell said, I am now going to spend every breath I have until the end of his presidency trying to hurt this man. That's when race relations started going down in this country.
I don't know Mitch that a lot of people pay attention
to
Mitch McConnell.
Party and Donald Trump and all of the people who pushed the he wasn't born in this country, they gave everybody the okay. They said, take your hoods out of the closet, bring them back on. It's time to go to war. We got ourselves a black man in the White House, and we're not going to let him accomplish a single thing. And you know what? He did so anyway, and he had a historical eight-year president.
I think you're the one that's inflating the reaction to it all, Tony. He got elected by a huge number of white people in this country.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, so not all white people are saying, uh-oh, we have a black president. We sure can't let him do anything. I think that's nonsense.
People. I absolutely agree. But a percentage of our leadership in the Republican Party absolutely allowed that racist meme about the not being born here. Look at how many people. Look at every poll that's been done in the last few years of white Republican males who still believe that the president is a Muslim who was born in Kenya. It's amazing. There's more white Republican males today who believe that the president was born in another country than believe in climate change. That's a problem.
Well, I don't know. I don't think asking for a birth certificate is a racist thing. I think if a guy has a parent that was born from another country, if somebody comes over and his name is Vladimir Tarasenko and wants to run for president and his parents are from Russia, you're probably going to want to see a birth certificate. Would that be racist?
And you ask for it and you see it and the problems and the story goes away.
But is it racist to ask for it?
You don't carry on an eight-year campaign. You just don't.
I don't know how much of an eight-year campaign it's been. It's come up a little bit during this election cycle, not much.
It's been more than an eight-year campaign. Donald Trump was still talking about it until 3 weeks ago.
Well, I haven't heard a whole lot of talk about it in this election. I just haven't. I haven't heard much talk about that. And again, it came up when Hillary was running against him. And back at a time when Barack Obama said Hillary Clinton will say anything to get elected. And I think we found that that's pretty true.
I think most politicians will say anything to be elected.
Yeah, well, that's probably true. I guess we'll have an agreement on that.
Tony Messenger is our guest here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. I wanted to let you gentlemen go back and forth and come to an agreement to disagree. But I also want to get your perspective, Tony, on the more statewide centered elections, specifically Koster and Greitens. I hadn't seen a real recent poll, and the most recent one we had was from a few weeks ago, and that sided Koster with an approximate 10-point lead, if I'm not mistaken. What are the latest numbers that you have seen regarding the gubernatorial race?
So, sadly, there's not a lot of really good, comprehensive, objective polling in Missouri. Most of the polling that you see is somehow connected to the campaigns, and so it's hard to make too much of an objective look at the numbers that that I've seen. But the numbers that I've seen all show Koster with a lead, and he's consistently had a lead. The one that you referenced that was most interesting, the 10-point lead, showed that he actually had increased his lead from the primary. And that's the one that actually surprised a lot of folks, because the expectation was Eric Greitens was going to have so much money, and he does, Both Greitens and Koster have raised a tremendous amount of money. This is going to be it's going to blow the record away for most expensive gubernatorial race in the history of Missouri, which is a problem in and of itself. But Greitens hasn't gained. And I think one of the reasons that he hasn't gained was he was speaking to a similar disaffected base in the primary that Trump was speaking to. And he was that, you know, blow him up candidate. I'm going to go on TV shooting automatic weapons and look cool and talk about being a Navy SEAL and being angry. And then he thought he could just flip the switch and all of a sudden run a campaign as a humanitarian and bring along people like me. Well, the problem is Eric Greitens won't meet with me. Eric Greitens hasn't returned any attempts from people like me to get an interview. He's done very few. He's done a couple, but he's done very few actual interviews. He hasn't actually done much speaking to just regular Missourians. And what he's doing is he's actually running a campaign against his own party, which sometimes works in the primary, but now has mainstream Republicans, the types of people that would be in the field, in the street, knocking on doors, working for you, getting the vote out. A lot of mainstream Republicans are disgusted by Eric Greitens because they don't actually know who he is or believe he is who he says he is. And so these are folks that have known Chris Koster for a long time. So now you have this most unusual of circumstances in which mainstream Republican organizations, like most of the farm organizations that are very active in rural Missouri, are endorsing Chris Koster, the NRA endorsing Chris Koster. And those things matter to the extent that those organizations offer access to grassroots type workers in getting an election out. So I will be shocked at this point if Eric Greitens defeats Chris Koster. I think Koster is going to be our next governor. And it's just been... It shows that Missouri is still one of those states in which old-fashioned campaigning matters. You know, this idea that you're an outsider can be appealing, but one of the points that Koster makes that I think is effective is he talks about the difficulty of being in the public eye, of being a public official, of being elected time and time again, and standing in the state Senate with Democrats and Republicans, and the people of Missouri, in this case, get to see that over a period of time. And that makes you a target if you've been in office for a long time, but it also shows a certain level of accomplishment and professionalism that voters expect in a governor. They expect the governor to know how the budget works, and not just be able to say, well, I'll figure it out when I get there.
Tony Messenger, our guest on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. You can read his column in the Post-Dispatch online at stltoday.com, and you can hear him on KTRS, the Big 550. Tony, I have heard from people that insider sounds too, and almost self-indulgent, really, to say that I have some kind of context, but from people whose opinion in the political scene that I respect, saying that nationally, from a Republican National Committee perspective and then also a DNC perspective, that those party chairs and higher-ups in each respective committee consider the potential of both Greitens and Koster to be potentially, again, I want to speak and emphasize verbally potentially, that beyond the state of Missouri. Is that an accurate perception? In other words, that these guys could be national, whoever were to win, and clearly at this point you think it's going to be Koster, but that's the view around the country?
Well, let me put it this way. They're both attractive candidates. They both know how to raise money. They both have resumes that can serve well in certain political context, and they both have tremendous ambition. So to say that both of them have a national platform on their minds, I think, is definitely fair. And to say that they've thought about it and that national folks have thought about it is no doubt true. I mean, Greitens has already reserved Greitens for president.com. So There's no doubt that they each, in their own way, have the sort of profile that theoretically works nationally. The challenge that Greitens is going to have is that he's following such a non-traditional path, and he isn't himself a billionaire. He still has to go out and raise money, and he's good at it, but he's still got to go out and raise money. At some point, the guy who's running for governor who's never been elected to anything can't just make a national jump to being a national political figure if he doesn't, at some point, get some kind of electoral victory. And particularly when he started as a Democrat and now he's a Republican, and he ran a primary in which he was a right-wing Republican, and he's kind of acting in the general like maybe he's not quite a right-wing Republican. He says his platform is to bring ethics to Jefferson City, and yet when you look at his campaign finance, you wonder about his own ethics. So, I mean, at some point, I'm a Navy SEAL who started a wonderful nonprofit, both tremendous things that Americans respect, and a Rhodes Scholar, obviously a very intelligent guy. Again, great resume builders, but resumes don't get it done at the national level. You have to have served in the trenches in some capacity. So the question for an Eric Greitens, as compared to Koster, who will likely be the governor and then have a natural platform to move on to national office, whether it's U.S. Senate or trying to throw himself into the, you know, the big ring of president and vice president presidential politics. Greitens has to decide what he's going to do next. If he loses the governor's race, as I expect he will, then he's got to decide, okay, what do I do next? I've got to have a platform to build on. I've got to be elected to Congress or elected to the U.S. Senate or lower my sights a little bit and maybe go to the Missouri Senate. Or, you know, there has to be something that he does that gives him a sense of accomplishment for voters to say, okay, the resume's great, but can you actually accomplish anything in politics? Because accomplishing things in politics is difficult. And so that's going to be a challenge for him. I don't know the man. I think one of the things he's going to have to do is become more comfortable with the media and figure out who he is. Because to be successful on the national scale, you have to have some level of authenticity. One of the reasons that so many of the Republican candidates who are running for president failed so miserably is because they just weren't seen as authentic. The actual people that they may be on their resume look pretty good, but then they ran in a primary in which they thought they had to pretend to be something that they weren't. And that authenticity ultimately becomes clear to voters, and people drop away. And so at some point, Greitens has to decide, am I a moderate? Am I in the middle? Am I a right-wing Republican or a left-wing Democrat? Because he's been all of those things. And he's got to kind of decide where he's going to be. Koster's been a Democrat and a Republican, but he's been in that middle, generally speaking, in both areas. He was seen as, you know, sort of a moderate Republican, and he's seen as a very conservative Democrat. He's obviously been in both parties, but he can make a strong argument that he's been in the great middle, so to speak. And Greitens can't yet make that argument, at least not convincingly. And so to become a national figure, he's going to have to accomplish something first. But the premise of your question is, I believe, accurate. I believe both of them both have the ambition to want to be on the national political scale, mm-hmm. and both of them have been identified by various national forces, in part because of either their resumes or their ability to raise money. As potential national political forces.
Tony Messenger, our guest here on the Appliance Discounter phone lines. You're listening to the all-new 590 The Fan KFNS. Tony, in the U.S. Senate race, it is termed as one of the closest coming up on November 8th. Roy Blunt against Jason Kander. Looking at realclearpolitics.com, Blunt carrying a 43.5% vote, Kander 41%. Your thoughts on this election?
If I were betting, I think Roy Blunt's going to win. I think it's going to be much closer than he expected months ago. I still think he likely wins because I think Trump carries Missouri, and Roy Blunt, I think it was a poor decision on his part from a standpoint of who he actually is as a man, but he decided to jump on the Trump bandwagon and stay on the Trump bandwagon. I personally think he's better than that. I was disappointed by that decision, but I think he made it for a political reason, and I think it's going to likely work for him, and he will barely beat Jason Kander. The one caveat I would throw in there, because one, Kander's run a very good campaign and has a very good resume and has produced high-quality ads that I think are resonating with voters. If Hillary Clinton continues in the next week and a half to simply dominate in the national polls and in the battleground states, if her campaign becomes convinced that it's as done as it looks, that the electoral math is impossible for Donald Trump, then I can imagine a scenario where the Clinton campaign says, look, the way we actually unify the country is I can't just beat Donald Trump. I have to destroy him. And that means I've got to start throwing some money into places like Missouri that the Clinton campaign hasn't campaigned here. They don't care about Missouri. They don't need Missouri. If in the last week and a half of the election, the Clinton campaign decided I really want a blue Senate and I might even get close to a blue House. Let's go get Missouri. Let's go get a few of these other states that appear to be Trump strongholds, but his campaign's on fire. Then I think there is a chance for Jason Kander to actually beat Roy Blunt. But without the national money being thrown in at the end, I think it's still an uphill battle because Blunt has long-standing good grassroots, on-the-ground team, get-out-the-vote stuff. He's got a lot of loyalty built up within the Republican Party, and even some Democrats. I mean, he's generally been pretty good for St. Louis. He was directly involved in making sure that the NGA stayed here and went up to the north side of the city, and so I tend to think he's still going to win, but it's going to be a lot closer than he thought. And if the Democrats decide to throw some money into Missouri in the last week and a half of the election, all bets are off, and Jason Kander can win this thing.
Tony Messenger, Post Dispatch, and KTRS, our guest here on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Tony, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much for joining the show, sir.
Thanks, gentlemen. Good to talk to you.
Thank you, Tony.
Hi, Tony.
Tony Messenger with us talk here on later. The Ryan Kelly Morning After. Your thoughts are welcome. 855-282-8255. 855-282-8255. Talking presidential election, talking the U.S. Senate election, and, of course, also Coster Greitens, the gubernatorial election. Really, the only one of those three, at least at this moment, from a polling data standpoint, that is even within 3 points, is the Kander Blunt election. Tony saying he expects Roy Blunt to hold on to that, Coster to win the governor's mansion, and then Hillary Clinton to win the White House. Your thoughts are welcome. Call in or text in, and we'll get the people involved.
Do you think candidates in general today are less likable because they are really less qualified, or because of the current culture with social media where everybody's got an opinion, and that just the kind of the atmosphere in the country today where everybody's quick to criticize and point out fault?
I think
that they're really better than what we think they might be.
I feel like in 2016 it's the case, but I don't know if that's the crop. And I think you have to go back. At least I don't want to put rules for other people. For me, I feel like social media's impact truly began to cross over into the mainstream in 08. I don't think that was present in 04. Facebook was limited when it started to people in college, and then it blew up when it expanded to people outside of college. That's why MySpace was popular at the time. So then Facebook expanded. Twitter arrived 08, 09, if I'm not mistaken. And so to go back to use the social media question, which I think is a great question, Doug, I thought John McCain And I thought Mitt Romney, and I still think John McCain, and I still think Mitt Romney, and I also think Barack Obama all come across to me as A, likable, B, incredibly intelligent, and C, from my perspective. There's no data to support this, I suppose. It's just intuition. As people who I would trust, whether I would agree with their policy or disagree with their policy, that they believe truly that what they are doing is in the best interest of the country, either as they are currently in the White House or in the case of McCain or Romney, should they have won the White House. And personally, for me, I don't feel that way about Hillary Clinton. It's not to say I'm certain she won't. I don't feel that way about Donald Trump. I did feel that way about Bernie Sanders, even if I didn't necessarily align with his policies. And of all of the people who were up on the Republican stage over the course of it, I don't know who else I would have been able to say that about. So that's an odd thing. And clearly, since I cited Romney and McCain, it's not based on political party. It's just intuitive. So I don't know if from 2012 to 2016, social media has played a role in it that drastically, or if it's just in this particular case, what the net has caught as far as candidates from the two major parties has produced candidates who either the public doesn't like or the public doesn't trust, or they don't like because they don't trust.
This presidential election cycle, I agree with you, has given us two people that I don't care what side of the aisle on. You have to look at them and say, that's not the best we can offer. I think the cable news cycle has made political campaigns less transparent. I get that, along with social media, where flaws are picked out, not just because I think it's legitimate in this case on all candidates. I think Kasich was
That's right.
Likeable.
That's
Kasich.
That's exactly right.
I think Rubio.
That's who I was going to vote for in the Missouri primary.
I think Rubio came across well. I think he got bad campaign advice and played into Donald Trump's hand in that. I think he's a guy that somewhere down the road still has political life on the Republican side. But I disagree with Tony on a lot of different things. I just that's the one thing that bothers me, that, you know, to kind of say, well, you know, this year's presidential election is a joke and it's Trump's fault. I disagree with that because I think there's plenty on both sides, and that irritates me because, well, I'm not quite as adverse to Hillary as Doug is. I think a lot of your points are true, and that she's every bit as bad as he is for different reasons.
I read an article the other day saying Donald Trump is really a product of our current culture, our current me first, look at me type of culture. Let me see what outrageous thing I can say to garner attention. He's a star of reality TV. He's everything that America is kind of becoming, more vulgar, less civilized, quick to criticize. This is kind of what our culture has created, and it's part of why, inexplicably, he is so popular. You know, half the country, at least.
I absolutely agree with that statement, just that he's a product of the culture. And the culture, I would include what the cat was just talking about, which is social media and the cable news cycle. Some of the things that he says just play exactly to that particular audience on that side. I thought that while I was watching the thing on Sunday night. I'm like, oh, I bet some people, I could just picture, like, oh, they love finally Bill Clinton getting dressed down for his sexual, multiple sexual accusations, and to have four of those women sitting there. But who is that actually bringing to the table, who is actually undecided when it really gets down to it? But it's the proverbial red meat. A talking point that personally I disagree with, it's not to say I'm going to scream at somebody who would come to the table with a different opinion, and I can only really speak to, you know, the past 30 years where I felt like I was even aware of this stuff. But from my standpoint, George H.W. Bush would be more qualified than Hillary Clinton, if we're talking about the most qualified to run for president.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Resume.
He had so many. I went back. I read George W. Bush's book on his father. And I would recommend that. And again, this is coming from somebody who would, at least again, I always say, socially would be far to the left, which I believe the social issues is one of the reasons why the Republican Party, from my standpoint, is off the rails and has the situation that they have.
I think that's fair.
If they would just, but I also understand that it's gotten, and it really brought them back in the mid-1970s to play to that religious right, early 1980s, And I think that's why they've gone off the rails with some of the people been put forth in national elections. That's my opinion. And I think that's unfortunate. I want the Republican Party to get back because it would make both political parties have to raise their game and ideally prevent the scenario that we have in 2016. But you take a look at what George H.W. Bush had done outside of being a representative from Texas. Then he was the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., chair of the Republican Party, U.S. liaison to the People's Republic of China, director of the CIA, then the vice president. He ran a good campaign against Ronald Reagan in 1980, and then, of course, was the vice president for 8 years before becoming the president. So leading into that 1988 election against Michael Dukakis, I would say that George H.W. Bush's resume in my lifetime would be superior to that of Hillary Clinton. And that's not a tit-for-tat thing. That's just, okay, you hear this over and over again, and it's fine, but I feel like it's kind of prisoner of the moment, Mike and Mike radio after a big game. That was the best ever. And it's just like, eh, I don't know. I mean, let's go back 25 years, and here's a man who had done it at the local level, had done it with the UN, had done it for his party, had done it in China, and had done it also as the director of the CIA before becoming vice president. That resume, to me, supersedes Hillary Clinton.
Served in World War II with the accommodation, some sort of hero there as well. Yeah, he was everything, every kind of background that you would want in somebody.
I would think in another year, too, if you were part of... The world is on fire right now, and I'm not putting that on one party's doorstep or at the president's, but the world is on fire, and there were clearly a lot of mistakes that the United States and the current administration made along the way, and Hillary was part of that. And if it was someone who was better versed in foreign affairs, instead of saying that, you know, the Russians are killing ISIS, I think they could have made more hay out of this. But I can't imagine that people look at the world as we see it today and think we're headed in a good direction. I mean, we're at odds with Russia, who's aligned with China now. I mean, there's some pretty scary stuff out there. Mm-hmm. And if Hillary on one hand has a hand in that, and on the other side you had a guy who seems to have no interest in really understanding the problem.
Learning,
I mean, it's
about it.
It's appalling to me.
I would really like to be able to say that's it from Trump. That's enough. I can't let the other side win. But the other side is, to me, is so unsavory also that it's hard to do that. It's hard to just say, sure, let's give this horribly corrupt politician, let's make her the president. She lies about everything. Let's go ahead and give it to her. That's hard to do.
Dan, you are on the appliance discounter phone line. Ziggy, if you could punch Dan up. Dan, good morning.
Hello, Dan.
Dan is on the appliance discounter phone lines.
Daniel! Danny boy! No, he's not
Doug,
there.
Doug, Angry Mike is on the appliance discounter phone
Hello,
lines.
Angry Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Vaughn?
I'm fine. You?
Hey, Mr. Vaughn, I agree with your premise that, you know, Barack Obama increased the racist hostilities on both sides. Hello?
Yeah, I hear you. Oh, you're breaking up there for me.
I heard a crackling. I thought you cut me off.
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, racism exists on both sides, whether it's liberal or right wing or whatever you want to call those type of factions. But Obama, not because he was black, but because of the policies, like you said, with police shootings. I mean, he just basically just criticized the police shootings without any facts, and that's, you know, whether intentionally or unintentionally raised the racist hostilities in both in the right wing and, you know, left wing is racist. You know, they have racist also too. And so, you know, it's always going to be there. But I mean, the hostilities are just so much out of whack right now that I think it's just creating nothing getting done in this country. I mean, do you agree with that? It's just based solely on racial hostility, or is just other factors that are preventing these two groups from getting anything done?
Thank you, Angry Mike. I apologize to the audience. The reason I don't like to go to Angry Mike is because I believe he's a fake caller. But I don't have control of the phone lines in the studio, so that is the reason that happened. That's on me. That's 100% on me. So, my fault. We got a break. We're at the top of the hour. Kelly Chase going to join us on the other side of the break. It's brought to you by Petromart. Kelly Chase, Blues opening in the season this evening against the Blackhawks, back in St. Louis tomorrow night against the Minnesota Wild. Chaser will join us next on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Us next on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Us next on the Ryan Kelly Morning After. Us next on the Ryan Kelly Morning After.